This is the Cafe Racer Podcast, episode 169 for November 1st, 2020. I am Daddy No Fun.
And I'm Crash.
Wow, that was pretty flawless.
It was all right. Yeah, we knew the date. We knew the year. We knew the number of the episode.
We knew our names.
So, look at that. Yeah. So right at the top, episode is sponsored by DiscountRamps.com. So if you go to Discount Ramps, you can use the code CAFE to get 15% off your purchase. They've been kind enough to send me, in this time of global bike rack shortage, a motorcycle like hitch carrier that supports like two dirt bikes or whatever. Total weight capacity is like 600 pounds. And I was thinking about this, like I have a little like hatchback Lexus and it would look absolutely ridiculous with my KTM on the back, which in theory would... It's under the weight limit. Like I'd have to take the bags off and everything, but not to keep it under the weight, but just to like make it fit.
But what about the weight limit of the car? Like, would it take the front wheels off the ground?
I don't know. There's only one way to find out.
Like 580 pounds on the back and it's like.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. It would look so stupid.
I know, but I think it would be funny.
Do it. Yeah. Like I almost want to do it just for pictures, like as a stunt kind of thing, but I'm not going to drive around with it.
I would just to make it look. So what are you going to put on the back of that thing?
Well, right now, I'm going to put my electric bicycle on the back of it. Cause I cannot like for the life of me, find an actual bike rack that like, there's just a shortage everywhere. Cause you know, with the pandemic and everybody like moving to like outdoor sports and stuff like that, like bike racks are just sold out all over the place. And especially a bike rack that's big enough and sturdy enough to support a 65-pound electric bicycle.
Right.
A lot of them can't do it. So the e-bike is going to go on there for now. And then I'm really, really torn. And I sent you a text the other day about how I can't decide whether I want to get a new CT125 or Trail 125, whatever the hell they call it here, when they come out. Or a TW200, because I've wanted one forever.
My opinion, unsolicited, like who cares, is the Honda.
Yeah, I the Honda's fuel injected. Obviously, like the tricky thing is, you know, the TW has been out forever, so like I could get a used one for less. Presumably than the Honda.
Right.
But when I've looked for used ones, most of the used ones that would be less than the Honda have been around forever and are kind of like, you know, shit boxes. So, and then like, if I was looking at just like new prices, the TW, I think, is about $1,000 or $1,500 more.
Okay.
It will do highway speed though, which, I mean, I wouldn't want to do that for very long. I wouldn't want to like, you know, do a trip across the country at 70 miles an hour on the TW, but it will go 70 miles an hour, which the Honda will not.
What does the Honda top out at?
I think like 50. I mean, granted, sure. Like there's performance motors and stuff like that for, cause it's a lay down Honda engine. So I could put a 300cc like Predator motor in there or whatever, but,
it's just the cool factor of the CT125. It's like,
yeah, the CT125 is visually far superior. And I think for what I kind of would want to do with it, pretty much equal to the task in every way, except for the speed thing. Which most of what I would want to do with it wouldn't be at that speed anyway. So, you know, if I was going to like do some harebrained ride across the Transamerica Trail on a bike, that's kind of silly, sort of trip, most of that would be done at 35, 40 miles an hour anyway. So who cares?
Right. Right. I mean, I'm seriously considering thinking about buying two of them. I mean, I know the cost.
Right. Listen, yeah. You're like sort of van.
Yeah. Van and, situation, yeah. And my logic is, you know, at let's say the MSRP is $38.99 for this thing.
Yeah.
Right. They're going to sell less than that. We know that. Maybe $3,400, you think? Probably.
I've never been able to find I've rarely found good deals on bikes. So.
Okay. Well, let's just say it's $38.99. Their e-bikes range in price from like $1,500 to $4,500.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, I was going to try to stay in the $1,500 range for an e-bike, but and there are some places I know that I'm not going to be able to use the trail. Maybe I'll get one trail and one e-bike. I don't know, but I'm just really, they're light enough, they're small enough where I can put two on a rack mm-hmm. behind the thing. And it's just such a cool thing to have, you know, and it's a little bit, I mean, obviously I'm going to get more exercise if I buy an e-bike and actually pedal it, you know, and this, the Trail 125s, it's 100% not a moped. You know, there is no type of system on there where you can pedal that thing. It's a true motorcycle, but man, is it cool. And it's just, you know, you can haul more stuff on it. We could probably have a little bit farther range. It's just super neat.
The Honda's quoted curb weight for the CT is 259 pounds.
Right. That's probably dry, right?
I think when Honda does curb weight, they're including like everything.
Okay.
Some of the manufacturers do that. I think Honda's one that they're inclusive of, you know, all the stuff. A TW is 20 pounds heavier.
Okay. Still not excessive at like 280, no. You know,
part of the problem is I've, you know, wanted a TW for a very long time. Like it's ugly and weird and whatever, but they make a bunch of, you know, like they make a nice big rear luggage rack for it, which I get the CT comes with that, you know, built into it. There's no passenger seat on the CT. Not that I'd need one, but like just real estate for packing crap, I guess. But it's a tough call for me at the moment. I really like the fuel injection on the CT.
Yeah.
And ABS, like, you know, the TW is just it's a very small little hammer that has no extra features.
They don't make a fuel injected version of the TW200.
No, that thing is not since 1987.
Okay.
So it's got two disc brakes now as of like the either late 90s or early 2000s. It has disc brakes.
It's also a lot bigger too, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's overall like just sort of physical size is quite a bit larger.
Hey, point of privilege for a second.
Yeah.
I'd like to do a shout out to somebody.
Okay.
And this is a special person. And the funny thing about this person is she doesn't own a motorcycle, but she listens to our show faithfully.
Oh, nice.
Hey, Loretta, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Keep listening. You know who you are. back to the TW. We saw one when we were in Colorado for that van expo, and Marcy was like, that thing's really cool. I'm like, yeah, that's what Chris wants.
Yeah, I've seen a bunch of them. There were a ton of them at the Vintage Motorcycle Days. Almost all of them having big signs that said not for sale on them.
What do these cost new? I know that retail on them is like $4,000.
Like 45.
Okay.
Yeah. So I guess they're not even $1,500 more. Like if you're looking at, you know, just MSRP, it's only like $600 more or $700 more.
Have you ridden one?
No, I haven't.
Hmm.
And you know what? That's a good point. And not a bad transition way to set me up for a segue that I'm now going to call out and completely destroy. But Twisted Road, which I've been using a lot lately, or people have been using my bike a lot lately. In fact, it just came back from a rental yesterday. But Twisted Road, there's a guy that has one for, I think, for like $50 a day. So I should just friggin' go rent this damn thing and, you know, ride around on it for the day. And maybe I'll hate it.
Yeah, I was actually talking to a guy the other day that used to live in San Diego. And he was saying that Eagle Rider, believe it or not, up in like San Francisco has a bunch of Royal Enfields for like $49 a day.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because I was thinking maybe if the one down in San Diego has some, I would fly out to you and we could do like a weekend renting like the, I'm going to say Himalayan because I've never heard anybody say Himalayan in my life, but rent a couple of those things and just like check them out. But maybe they've got, we might have to look into Eagle Rider. Maybe they got one of these. He said they're starting to carry a more diverse range of bikes.
I know they have. They have been expanding a little bit. There's a guy here locally that has two of them for rent on Twisted Road. He has like four or five bikes on Twisted Road.
He's got two TW200s?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
they're like a couple years apart.
All right. So maybe this is what, maybe I'll fly out for a weekend when you're not like super busy.
Yeah.
We'll do a day of these and a day of the Royal Enfield and just
that'd be cool.
cruise around San Diego. Yeah.
Yeah. Or if we could find one of each, we just like swap off halfway through the day.
Yeah, I'd do the same thing. That'd be great. So that might be in the works, man. Especially with the weather getting a little, well, weather's always good for you guys, right?
Yeah, the weather's pretty great out here
all
the time. Like it's been in the, I don't know, it's 63 degrees outside right now and it's 7 in the morning here. So, you know, it's not super cold. It's not really going to get super cold because it's San Diego. Except for like if we have some weird freak thing happen, which it's 2020, so it's probably going to happen.
Right.
My KTM has been getting so much like action on Twisted Road in the last couple of like, well, I guess like the last month and a half. You know, everybody's been losing their minds in the pandemic, getting out, you know, trying to be outside, do stuff. And I bit off a lot. I don't know if it's more than I can chew, but it's a lot with regard to like college classes and stuff right now. So I haven't really had time to ride hardly at all. And it came back from a rental yesterday. Last weekend it was rented. So like it got rented last weekend while I was in Sedona. I got it back on Monday night and then it got picked up on Tuesday. Like I had almost no turnaround. And the guy that rented it last weekend, he's apparently a very, very clean, like everything is going to look real nice kind of guy. So like he rented the bike for me, took it home, cleaned it up. Like the most I ever do is hit this thing with a hose, like just blast off the bugs or whatever. But like he cleaned it up. I can still smell like the Plexus, you know, cleaner smell on it when I open up like the saddlebags.
Right.
He sent me a picture. He's like, bike's all detailed. I'm ready to go ride with the guys tomorrow. And I was like, wow, that's the first time that thing's been washed in like a year at least.
Yeah. We were having that conversation the other day with Scotty and he's like, I don't know why people, you know, wash their bike.
And then he washed it again before he brought it back. And he's like, hey, can I rent your bike again? He's like, dude, you can rent my bike anytime you want.
Right.
Like, shit. Just, if you're going to treat it like this, just borrow it for a day. I don't even care at this point. Like, and so he is actually renting it two more times this year. His plan is to buy a 2019 or 2020 Super Duke GT. But he doesn't, you know, he's not ready to actually like go plunk down the money on it right now. And so he's like, I'm just going to, if it's cool with you, I'm just going to rent your bike a couple more times this year for a few other little trips. He has a Hyper Motard right now. So
I'm just, I can't wrap my brain around somebody. Like I'll let somebody borrow my bike that I know, but renting it to a total stranger just weirds me out, you know?
Yeah. It's been really good lately. The guy that rented it, that just bought it back yesterday, you know, took great care of it. It's back to looking all buggy like when I have it.
So. Is there a minimum on the rental, like time or not? Like, can somebody come rent?
Set all that, yeah.
You can.
You don't. you can have it be just a day, which I have that. I have mine set up with like no minimum. You could rent my bike for a day and you know, bring it back same day if you want it. But
that's kind of the problem we've been
minimum. You can go in and like set on the calendar like when it's available, when it's not available. You can set mileage limits, stuff like that. So
yeah, the one thing that trying to like rent a something specific, you know, like a certain brand, like we're looking for the TWs. We've been having that issue trying to rent a van that they're very hard to find a specific one. And then when you do, first of all, a lot of them are 3-night minimum and and it's expensive. It's like $250 a night. And then on top of that, the charges, there's a service fee, there's a cleaning charge. You know, by the time you're done, it's over $1,000
right
for 3 nights.
Yeah,
I don't know. I guess the KTM I would feel better about right now just because it's got a lot of miles on it, you know, and it's worn in.
Renting your KTM out.
About renting it, yeah. I don't know what the market would be like. I may try it and see what happens. Then the other thing is, too, because you bring it someplace, don't you? Or you have them, how do you deliver the bike?
I just have them come to my house. A lot of times I've had them, like, a lot of times if it's like the guy that rented it last week, since I was going to be out of town, I just let him, he parked his car in my driveway, took the bike. And then when he returned it, you know, he brought the bike back, put the bike where I left it and then just took his car and left, you know, it was super clean. A lot of people get like that. Uber or get a ride over the house or whatever. But, RyderShare recently added the feature to offer delivery of the bike if you want. I've had a couple people ask if I could deliver the bike to them, and I have done it, I want to say twice, maybe. Most of the time I'm like, no, I can't. Like I just don't have time to get it to them, you know, and then have to get and then find a ride or whatever back. But there were a couple of times in the past, you know, couple years that I've been willing to deliver the bike to somebody because it, you know, worked out for my schedule or whatever.
Right.
I guess in theory with my new fancy ass hitch carrier, I could cart the KTM around San Diego and drop it off for people.
I mean, you could, it wouldn't be that hard, you know, like,
yeah, it would make me real nervous with my little ass hatchback with a custom trailer hitch that, you know, it's my car's not rated to tow anything ever.
Right.
So
I'm looking on Twisted Ruts to see what's available in my area. Just kind of, you know, and
yeah, I just looked up my area and I'm confused a little bit. So the price of my KTM, it says a number less than what I charge for it. And I don't know if it's like factoring it. I think I have a discount code active, which might be the case.
Oh, so it's going to show you the lowest price.
Yeah, so I think it might be showing me the price of renting the KTM with my discount code.
I'll tell you what, if you want to run a Harley Davidson here, you're in luck, man, because that's all that's on here.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It's like the majority of the bikes that I'm seeing for rent in this area are Harley Davidsons. You know, not that it's just, there's not much variety.
Yeah, there's a big variety here. I mean, it's San Diego, it's California. It's like,
oh, here's a 73 Honda CB350 for $68 a day. Go. That's kind of crazy.
It seems, I don't know if that's a lot or not.
Triumph Bonneville. See, I think this is a lot. $195 a day for a Bonneville? 2011
that's a lot.
Bonneville?
Okay. I mean, everybody puts a different sort of premium on, you know, their stuff, but like.
And then you got a 2012 Honda VTX 1300 Fury for $100 a day.
Yeah. My KTM is for, I have my KTM listed, like base price is like $99 a day. You know, trying to capture that under $100 sort of market.
Right.
And when I had my Bonneville, I put it up there for, I think, $60 a day. And it got rented a few times, but not very often. the KTM definitely gets a lot more action. Especially I've noticed during the winter months here, like last Christmas time, somebody rented it for a whole week while I was out of town.
What are they doing? I mean, not to sound stupid, but what are they doing with it besides riding?
For, I was going to say riding it, I hope. Right? Is I it assume, like, given the mileage keeps going up.
But I mean, they come out of town, do they need transportation, or they just want to like...
So the guy, most of the people that have rented my bike...
I mean the week-long dude. That's what I'm talking about. I get a day.
Yeah, yeah. He went... He went on a long trip. I think he put like 1,000 miles on the bike or something like that.
Yeah, he told me about this, right.
There was another guy that went on a slightly shorter trip and probably put... He rode up to Oregon and back. So he put a lot of miles on the bike. He came back and was... And like, I desperately needed new tires when he got back. Which I, you know, was going to need anyway. But it was just like, I didn't realize... Neither of us realized that the tires were like that worn. And then he got back and I'm like, oh shit, that's not good.
Right.
I'm sorry. I sent you on a bike that had tires that close to dead. My KTM's got 25,000 miles on it now, or it's 5 miles shy or something of 25,000 miles. And I used to have kind of a running total of like how many miles was me versus other people. And I'm not really sure now, but I'd say probably like 20 or 30% of those miles are other people now. Cause I had put like, I'd put like basically the first 14,000 miles on the bike. And then after that, it's been a pretty good mix of me and other people. And this year it's been almost entirely other people.
So funny, I searched by brand for KTM, mm-hmm. and there's nothing.
There's a niche.
There's a niche.
You could fill that. You could fill that slot.
Yeah. The closest one is like in Rockledge, Florida, which is pretty far north.
I've never heard of Rockledge, Florida.
Yeah, it's up near like the Canaveral, Daytona kind of area.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. It's kind of crazy.
I'm trying to find the Yamahas that were here. On my phone. I also kind of wonder how it works in terms of like showing whether they're available or not. I've never rented a bike from here we go. Yeah. So this guy, I found them. There's currently 3 TW200s here in the area. They're about 50 miles from my house. So I don't know exactly where that is, but it's not super close. But they're basically $80 a day.
Well, let's do that. You know, we'll pick some time when we both are freed up schedules and I'll fly in and do that. Cool. That'd be fun, man.
Yeah. I wonder if there's an Enfield in here.
I just looked around here. There's nothing. There's no Royal Enfields at all.
Yeah, I don't have anything. And that's like within 100 miles.
We'll try Eagle Rider and see. Because, I mean, if they're in San Francisco, they may have them in San Diego. Or maybe they can... We could plan something. They'll bring a bike down, or you know, we'll figure it out. Because he said he's also did some one ways from the from the Eagle Rider in San Francisco to the one in Los Angeles. I mean, I definitely want to do that. That would be a cool way to check it out. Like here's a 17 MV Agusta Turismo, the Veloce 800. For $70 a day. That'd be a cool bike to ride around on.
Yeah. The Eagle Rider location in San Diego only shows Harleys.
He said the same thing with San Francisco. You got to call him.
Okay. Cool. I think the Eagle Rider locations are all like independently owned too. Because they have like, it has like a different name. Like I know where the location is here.
Mm-hmm.
It's called like Motorcycle Rentals 9 or something like that, but it's the Eagle Rider like location.
The Eagle Rider network kind of.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why.
So maybe, yeah, yeah. That's, I wonder if that has something to do with it.
What about in LA? How far is that from you? A couple hours?
Hour and a half, 2 hours, depending on, you know, traffic and stuff. But, so let's see.
So
you
speaking
got to
of,
ride a fancy new motorcycle.
Yeah, I rode a couple of them, and I want to, that was going to like be the next segue. Speaking of riding somebody else's motorcycle, on the last show, we had Doug from AMN Moto.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought a KTM 390 Adventure, which I was really surprised how much fun that bike was to ride. I didn't go really far. I just rode around the neighborhood on it, and it was kind of raining a little bit. But man, what a blast. What a fun bike. I could definitely see myself tooling around town on something like that. It kind of inspired me to want to ride more smaller displacement motorcycles just to kind of get a feel of what they're like. And this thing was comfortable. You know, it had a, I wasn't sure what mode it was set in, to be honest with you.
Right.
The suspension was pretty decent. Doug's not, you know, my size, but he's not 160 pounds either. So whatever he had for the preload setting was okay. It was cool. I would highly recommend the bike to somebody who wants a small displacement bike. I wanted to take it a little bit off-road, like there's some areas around my house, but then I thought, you know what, I'm not going to do that. It's not my motorcycle. And he rode up in the rain, too, but it was cool. And then he kind of turned me on to the fact that BMW was doing a demo day. So the game plan was going to be that I was going to meet Doug and Scott, and we were going to ride up to Palm Bay, which is, for me, it's about an hour north. From them, it's like 2 hours north.
Mm-hmm.
And then I decided, you know what? I really want to ride a K1600 with bags on it. So I want to bring Marcy so she can figure out if she likes this or not.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm thinking, well, now she's not going to ride on my motorcycle up there because she's afraid of falling off the back of the KTM.
Right.
Because there's no box on it. And I told her, I'm like, I'll tell you what, I've got like a big 60 liter bag. Let me pack it with a bunch of crap. And we'll put that on the back and you can lean up against it. She's like, that's not a box. It's not secured to the back of the bike. I'm like, all right, forget it. Like, so we'll just drive up and we'll take the cameras and stuff and we'll film and do a whole thing on it. And then last minute, the night before, she was really had a lot she had to get done. And I really wanted to get there early. And she was going to be driving up from the south. So she would have had to left her house at like 6 o'clock in the morning to get for us to get there early. So I just said, you know what, stay home. I'm going to do this with these guys. And I rode up early to get there for the first ride, kind of missed the first ride. I got there. They open at 9. I got there at 9:30. They'd already sent a ride out. I go to register, and there was hardly anybody there. There were two guys waiting. And I'm looking at the girl doing the registration. She's wearing a mask. I'm like, damn, she looks kind of familiar. Like, I know her from somewhere, but I can't place her. So she's like, hey, are you pre-registered? I'm like, yeah, the voice sounds familiar. I'm like, yeah. She goes, what's your last name? I go, Grasso. And all of a sudden she goes, Steven. And it was Jackie Van Ham. I'm like, I thought that was you. Like, I couldn't. She's like, I don't have my glasses on. I'm like, yeah, I can tell. Like, you look different. So we were kind of, you know, chit-chatting for a little bit. And the first ride, I signed up for the K1600. How they do these demo rides, if you've never done one before, they have slots during the day. So, and this was a pretty decent ride, pretty decent distance. And you can't go there and say, okay, I want to sign up for the 9:30, the 10:30, the 11:30. You can sign up for one, and it's first come, first serve on whatever bikes they have. So if you wanted to ride, like I did, the K1600 GTL, and it was already, somebody had already asked for it before you got to go to the next slot. So I was lucky enough that that bike was available. There was only two guys in front of me. Mm-hmm. And, man, what a machine. Like,
yeah,
it was just,
yeah.
I mean, the only thing I noticed about, and this one had a quick shifter on it, which I've never used before.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy said, hey, let me give you just a quick rundown on the stuff. Cause it's a little overwhelming when you sit in the cockpit of this bike.
Yeah. Yeah. I rode a K1600B that like didn't have navigation. And so it was, you know, the stripped down version, and even that was a lot
more so than I thought the Goldwing, because there's two screens, you know, it had a GPS built into it, which was clearly a Garmin product, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then below it's this information screen, and you've got the thumb wheel thing, and then there's mode buttons all over the place. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to mess with any of this. But yeah, I just want to concentrate.
Wonder Wheel is pretty cool. I think it's a neat idea, the way that they've got like a scrolling wheel around your left grip that also moves left, like clicks left and right.
It's a
like
mouse.
Yeah.
It's a freaking mouse.
Yeah, it's kind of nice. I like it.
Yeah, where the KTM's just got like a button pad, this is an actual mouse. You can scroll through stuff and, you know, bring up sub menus and everything. And Doug's trying to like run me through this because he's got a GSA. I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to do any of this. I'm just going to ride the bike because I want to get a feel
for
the bike.
When I did my motorcycle relief ride, a couple of the bikes that I was on had the little Wonder Wheel thing. And it's something I could see like, okay, this is something you'll get used to, like definitely on, you know, get comfortable with. But when I first got on a bike that had all that stuff, I was like, just how do I put it in what I need it to be in for this ride and then never look at it again?
Right.
By the end of the day, I'd like played with it a little bit and gotten more comfortable. But, you know, I'm like, this is a new bike. We're going off road. I'm terrified. Someone put it in help mode.
Yeah. And that's kind of the way I felt. We're going to be driving in traffic. I don't want to be screwing around with stuff. I had the guys set the suspension for a rider and luggage.
Yeah.
And then I just rode it. And one of the first things I noticed about the bike is, to me, it feels like the center of gravity is pretty high. It feels top heavy to me compared to the KTM or compared to the other, like a Goldwing or the Ultra Classic. And I'm just trying to compare it to full touring bikes that I've ridden.
Sure.
The Ultra Classic is heavy low, you know, that big Harley motor low.
Yeah.
This thing felt top heavy to me. Like if I get it a light and I put my feet on the ground and kind of move the bike back and forth, I felt like, man, that's a lot of weight. I'm moving from side to side. But that engine and the power delivery, and I, like I said, I don't know what mode I was in with this bike as well, but sixth gear at 2,000 RPMs, there's no lugging, there's no stuttering, and you just roll on the throttle and it goes. And that's in sixth gear. Like I was really surprised.
It's a very impressive bike. When I rode the bagger version, I realized I was going 100 miles an hour on the freeway at one point, and I was like, how did I get here? What?
Yeah.
There was no, like, I was in such a cocoon of calm, quiet air, and just like, oh.
Yeah, especially with the windshield all the way up. You're looking through it, you know, and I'm kind of slouched a little bit, and even when I sat up straight, I'm looking right through the windshield, no air moving at all.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
You can have a cup of coffee, like, behind the windshield of that thing.
Oh, like I put my visor all the way up. No air's coming through. It was just fantastic. And it was a good day, so it wasn't hot. It was cool outside. But the other things were the quick shifter, the guy explained to me, he goes, when you're upshifting, you can be on the gas fully. Just let off the gas when you downshift. I can't tell when I'm upshifting, but when you're downshifting, it almost feels like as soon as you touch the clutch, it's engaging. I mean, as soon as you touch the shifter, it's engaging the clutch. Is that how they work? I don't really know how they work.
I'm not entirely sure. I know that it does rev match as you shift down. I think it does have like a little, you know, solenoid thingy that like minutely opens the clutch for just a second.
It feels that way. It feels like that. But it was flawless. You know, no clunking. It works fantastic. Yeah. And especially if your hand's a little tired, like from shifting a lot, that's a great feature.
Imagine doing that off-road. Like that's the GSAs do that too. Like the GS and the GSA does the same thing, and it's phenomenal.
I think I can buy it for the KTM, can I?
I don't know. You and I have basically the same KTM, just in different clothes. Mine has upshifting, but not rev matched downshifting. And it's just not a thing that that generation of KTM had. The newer ones, you know, all of the newer ones have it, the rev matched like downshifting.
I was really impressed. And it was, I definitely felt like this is a bike I could own and be happy and comfortable on. Mm-hmm. The one thing I did notice, and you even knew this was coming, was the seat to peg distance is really, really short for me.
Yeah, because they're almost like they're not forward controls on that thing. They're like kind of under your butt, aren't they?
Yeah, they're mid control. Well, a little bit back, maybe, but
yeah, somewhere in that like mid to
rear,
slightly rear,
yeah,
kind of range. Yeah,
I would have. I think in a long ride, I would have started to cramp up a little bit. You know,
mm-hmm. Yeah, that's been a factor on BMW touring bikes since like the K1200 LTs in the, you know, early 2000s and stuff. I know. It's just like a choice. Like, so that's like one of the deciding factors for a lot of people between a Goldwing and a, you know, big K bike.
Well, can't you buy a, isn't there a way to get an option to buy something?
Move the pegs?
No, I don't mean the lowering the pegs, but making the seat higher.
Oh yeah, probably. I mean, there's all the custom seat guys and all that sort of stuff. I'm not sure what, if BMW has anything, but
nothing from the factory though, like where you can order a high seat. Like I thought that was
maybe.
I'll have to look and see. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't
listen, man. I tell you what though, I was really impressed by the bike. I liked it a lot. And that wasn't even really playing around with any of the bells and whistles, just the feel. I didn't get a chance to look in the bags because honestly, they looked to be unlocked, but for the life of me, I couldn't figure out how to open them.
Oh yeah.
And I didn't want to screw around with it. The color was kind of weird. It was like
there's probably a single button on the dash that would have unlocked all the bags too.
Really?
Yeah, they have a lot of the BMW touring bikes have like keyless, like not keyless, but like, you know, electronic locking bags.
Hmm.
Power windows, power door locks, you know. Everything you want in a car.
Yeah, it felt that way. Like it was like that, you know. Oddly enough, I was like, man, I could do so much with this thing. It's crazy. And the rear seat looked really comfortable. Like I'm sure Marcy would not be complaining at all about that because it looked super comfy. Just, it was such a nice motorcycle. I thought I wasn't going to like it because of when I look at it, the riding position, like I felt like, and this is just my stupidity of you know, not really knowing how it feels without actually getting on it.
Mm-hmm.
That's been, you know, like the kind of the factor for a long time. You just look at the thing and go, oh, that thing sucks, you know?
Right.
Because I looked at the handlebar position and everything. I'm like, I'm not going to like that. It looks too laid back. No, it actually, everything fits really nice. You're real comfortable. That the seat is super dished out. So there's lower back support on it. I'll tell you what, but just the motor was what really impressed me. It's fast too.
Yeah, it feels like you're hovering above the ground.
Yeah,
like it doesn't really have like, it doesn't have like a pulsy kind of, you know, engine feel because it's that big six cylinder.
Right.
It's just like a vibration, like a light, like easy, like high frequency, like very like low intensity.
Yeah, and no no buzziness to it at all in anything,
yeah.
You know. And I was actually like taking my hand and moving it around and feeling different parts of the bike to see if there was any of that more annoying vibration, and it just doesn't exist. The only thing I really played around with a lot was the windshield. That works fantastic. So all the way in the low position, you're getting a face full of air. I found a position midway that I'm still looking over the windshield, but it was directing air completely over the top of my helmet. And then obviously in the fullest high position, it gets dead quiet. I didn't notice if the bike had speakers. I guess it does. I wasn't really paying attention. So I didn't mess around with the sound system or anything like that. I'd probably want to do a more intense ride, like a longer ride on it. But that was cool. It was really great. So the next bike I signed up for after that, I really wanted to ride an R18.
Mm-hmm.
Only because it's such a departure from what BMW's done, you know.
Yeah.
And
all those jokes about, like, you know, Harley's making an R1200 GS and BMW's making a Harley these days.
I know. That was like the meme I saw about how weird 2020 is, that
yeah,
BMW's making a, you know, stripped down cruiser and Harley's making an adventure bike. But you know what? Hey, I think that's great. I really do. And I think that especially for the person who's a BMW aficionado and fanboy, hey, man, look, you can have this now. So it was, I'm looking around and Jackie had kind of told me, she said, just to let you know, we've got four R18s out there. Two of them have Vance and Hines pipes on them. And she said, if you've never ridden one of these before, it's their heritage model kind of throwback where there's no real electronics on it, no real bells and whistles. It's pretty basic, pretty stripped down. So the ride, like I missed one of the rides because a ride started right after I got back, and Scott and Doug had went out with another guy, and I think Doug was on some flavor of a GS, and Scott rode the R18, and another guy did, and they were kind of comparing notes when they got back. So I jumped on the bike that Scott had ridden. The other one had a custom seat from Mustang on it, and these things look like they had some options with, you know, chrome packaging. I'm not real familiar with what comes on at standard.
Yeah.
But they did have the Vance and Hines pipes on them, so they sounded really great coming in. Well, I tell you, man, when I first sat on the bike, I was thinking, this is going to be really uncomfortable because you're in a little bit of a feet forward position. You know, you're kind of stretched out on it. But I really enjoyed it. The only thing was is that, and I felt the whole time riding like, I'm not supposed to like this. I'm not supposed to like this. Like, this is supposed to suck, you know? That shaft.
Having an identity crisis.
Yeah, like big time identity crisis. I'm like, am I, and you know, I'm sure I look like a complete goofball in all my adventure gear on this bike, right? So like the guy that, like even Scott had on, you know, like a leather jacket, and the guy next to him looked like you should have been on it, but man, what a fun bike to ride. Like the shaft jacking on it is so pronounced. Even when oh my God. Well, first of all, it's 1800cc opposed twin.
Yeah.
So 900cc jugs on either side.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you crank the thing up, the whole bike like jumps to one side. And even Scott and Doug were filming me and they laughed, you know, when I started it because it's so pronounced. It's got mode selection on it. There's three settings. There's a rain mode and then rock and roll. Right? So I'm kind of looking to find out if I don't really see it anywhere, but there is, I think besides like throttle delivery on those settings, I think there's a suspension change. I'm not 100% sure. I didn't see anywhere. There's no electronic preload on it. So, and I didn't want to screw around with it, but it felt like this particular bike that I rode had zero preload in it. It felt like a hardtail, honestly.
Oh, yeah, you were saying that.
Yeah, like it jarred my back really bad. And even Scott had said the same thing, like, you know, something's going on with the suspension. There's, you know, no adjustment to it. So, but man, the power on that bike, it's really fun to ride. Now, he said his T120 has more power. Like, it's definitely faster.
Well, it's definitely lighter.
Yeah.
So that's a big change. I mean, like, yeah, it's 600 cc's roughly less, but it's probably a lot lighter.
Well, I'm looking for the specs on what this thing, it didn't matter. I mean, all I can tell you is it was a bike I would have owned. Like I would have one of these in the garage. It was a lot of fun to ride. Like I could see myself spending a whole Saturday or Sunday like tooling around on this thing. It was a blast. And it's only 91 horsepower.
So the R18 weighs 761 pounds.
That's a pig.
T120 weighs 494.
Yeah, that's a pig, man. That's a big bike.
It's 250 pounds heavier.
Yeah. That's a big pig.
Yeah. That's like riding with an extra American person on the back.
Rather large American person.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, man, it's a small tank too, you know, it's like, but it was fun. I really enjoyed riding it. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Where is the suspension on this thing anyway?
I don't know. I couldn't really, I was looking around on it. I didn't look like really super close, but I'm sure it's
I wonder if they're doing that Harley style thing where like the soft tail thing where the shocks are like
underneath
laid
it
on their side underneath the bike.
That's the only thing I can tell because it looks like a hardtail.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I know there's suspension because it did move a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know what it is or where it is. And I'm looking at pictures of it and I don't really see it. It's kind of cool because the shaft is exposed. You know, it looks like a drive shaft.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a neat looking bike too for a cruiser where I typically don't like the look. This thing, I kind of was like, wow, I kind of like this. It's pretty neat. Now, I don't like the stock exhaust on the there's two versions of it.
Like fishtail.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. I'm not a fan of that at all. The Vance and Hines stuff looked a lot cooler.
So the suspension is under the seat. It's like on its side, going from like basically it runs right up to where the bottom of the tank comes down to the frame.
Well, that's maybe why it felt really weird too, because interesting.
Similar to like the Triumph bobber. It looks like those also might be pictures of the concept bike, so I could be completely wrong, but
well, hey, if you know about the bike a lot, write in and let us know. And if you've ridden one, let us know what you think. I mean, I'm not a good barometer for this because I've never ridden a lot of cruisers. So I'm sure besides like power cruisers, you know, like I rode the Diavel, which is just insane, but it's not in the same category as this. This is so much more visceral. It, you know, the opposed twin is a fun motor to be on. It sounded cool. And it's not really loud either. Like it wasn't bad in my helmet.
Even you had the Vance and Hines pipe.
Yeah.
Situation. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. 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 It was fun. It was cool.
I want the kickstand to like just deploy out from the left cylinder. Like, I just think it looked really funny. It just like fold down.
The kickstand was a little hard to find too. Like, I was like struggling, like trying to get the thing down. I felt like a moron. One thing I did notice too about this bike was the way the foot pegs were situated. Like Scott said, a lot of people complain about your foot hitting the cylinder. Well, on the shift side, I didn't feel that at all. On the brake side, a little bit I did, like when I went for the brake. But the one thing I noticed was if you've got like on riding pants that are flared a little bit, they kept catching on the peg when I went to go put my feet down.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a little disconcerting because I was like, you know, I'm kind of like putting my foot down and leaning over at the same time. And if you kind of missed it and hung up, I could see somebody falling over on this thing.
I think I've done that, actually. Really? I think I have fallen over. Not on this bike, obviously. I've never ridden it, but I think I've done that on a bike at some point. There have been many reasons why I've ended up with a bike on its side and me standing over it looking at it going, huh, well, that happened.
Yeah, it's happened a few times.
Yeah.
It was, you know, the ones that we were riding to were pretty chromed out. They were pretty neat. And then there was like writing on the tank that said built in Berlin that I thought was pretty cool. It was just a neat, neat, fun bike to ride. So
yeah,
next time I say I don't like cruisers, you can slap me on the back of the head and say, well, I know one you liked. And
Yeah. I mean, I felt that way about the Harley Fat Bob when we were in Vegas for the, for AIM. Like I wanted to hate everything about that motorcycle. And then I rode it and I was like, oh, it's actually fun to ride. I don't hate this part, the actual important part of the motorcycle, you know, riding it.
Honestly, I think that like throws back to the fact that we love riding motorcycles.
True.
And it's just like, get me on something two wheels and I'm probably going to find something I like about it. Yeah, I couldn't ride this bike long. Like after the demo ride, I was getting uncomfortable, but I've had to replace a seat on every motorcycle I've owned because I'm heavy, you know, with no butt padding. I got that no acetal disease. So like, you know, my butt bone like hits right away and it becomes uncomfortable. But I would have this bike in the garage. We were kind of talking with a bunch of people. I'm like, you know, if money was no object, I'd have one of everything because I like them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure there's a few bikes I get bored of, you know?
Yeah. When I was going to Sedona last weekend, which we'll talk about briefly, it's not motorcycle related, but it's, you know, death related maybe, or like possible death related. But on the drive out there, I think it was a Honda NM4, you know, that real extra super weird thing that has
that's a bike I
like
a known.
Sandwich box for its saddlebag or whatever,
the Batmobile bike.
I saw one of those. It was very briefly, like, you know, going the opposite way on the freeway, but it's just like, why? Why did anybody buy that?
And I'm sure there were like a few people out there, like there's an MN4 owners group where they're like, I can't believe they stopped making this, you know, like the best motorcycle Honda ever made.
I just can't imagine that the person that buys an MN4 is not extremely weird. Like, I'm pretty weird, but that's like, you know, they're the advisor for the AV club at their local high school.
Or they're really into anime a lot.
Yeah.
Like they know all the characters' names.
A little bit, but yeah.
I don't know, man.
Like, yeah, it just seems like a really weird guy kind of bike.
And that thing wasn't really a scooter either, right? That was a full-on motorcycle. I mean, it looked...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got a weird riding position, too.
So here's the funny thing is...
Compared to the way it looks.
Have you ridden one?
No.
Neither
you
have I.
You rode one, didn't you?
No.
Oh, no? Somebody did at... One of our fellow podcasty friends rode one... at an AIM expo one year, but it might have been James from, you know, formerly
I could see James doing that too. Like, I'll ride that.
I think I remember him complaining about the tiny saddlebag. Like, you could fit a sandwich in it.
Right. Oh, that's about it. They're lunch boxes. They're not saddlebags.
Yeah. So if you follow outdoorsy kind of posts, like anybody that posts like outdoorsy stuff, you've probably seen those like cairns that people build, little like stacks of rocks that people build on their little hikes.
Oh yeah, I never could figure out what the hell that was.
Yeah, it's just a thing people have made. They just stack some rocks up or whatever. And I had never done it, and I was hiking. Me and my friend were hiking in Sedona, and I was like, yeah, screw it, I'm gonna make one. So I start picking up little rocks, and I was gonna put this really big, wide, like flat rock on top to make it look silly. And I pick up this rock that's probably like a one foot by like 8 inches size. And I pick it up, and as I do that, I bump the body of a snake that's like sleeping under the rock next to it, all coiled up.
Mm-hmm.
And I set my rock down, and I'm like, okay, time to go. And my friend's like, what? And I was like, big snake. It was probably about two and a half inches tall, like the body. I could see like a single part of like its coiled up body. And I could see its skin. I couldn't tell, you know, what its head looked like. I couldn't tell what its tail looked like. So we don't know for sure if it was a rattlesnake, but it had very rattlesnake-esque markings. It could have been a gopher snake, which is a much less basically non-dangerous creature. They do look very similar. Yeah, so scared the crap out of me. I'm not like terrified of snakes, but this was, you know, I could touch it. It was like right in front of me within less than an arm's length.
But it didn't rattle, no. Though, because you told me it was a rattlesnake.
No, I think it was sleeping.
All right. So it didn't even like coil up and want to bite you or anything?
No, all I saw was like the body, like the edge of the body, like sticking out from the rock next to it.
Okay.
I just didn't want to like disturb it any further because the cairn that I was making was on the rock it was sleeping under.
You got any pictures of this cairn that you made or not?
Nope, sure didn't get any pictures.
I just ran away, right away.
Hastily.
I'm leaving. Goodbye.
Yep. Yeah, I'm out.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not.
Yeah.
Snakes don't really like, they don't have that effect on me. Like, I'll check it out and see what it is and be like, oh, that's cool. And then.
Yeah, because of the potential that it could be an angry snake, I was like, yeah, I'm going to go.
Well, listen, that's probably the smart thing to do. No one ever said I was intelligent, so
yeah,
I'd try to pick it up. You know,
if I had seen it from, you know, farther off, and if it had been like out, because I've seen rattlesnakes here in San Diego like a couple times while like riding dirt bikes or whatever, and when I see them from far enough away, I'll happily like stop and take a look and maybe approach a little bit to a distance where I feel safe, you know? But
right.
This was like, surprise, I'm right in your face.
Right. And that's it can be a little bit jarring sometimes. Like,
yeah,
crap. you know, like I didn't mean to wake this dude up and have him attack me, but.
Right. I've heard recently that like a lot of rattlesnakes haven't been rattling either. Like they don't, some of them don't rattle to warn you about them as much anymore.
What, is there like some sort of protest or something? What do you mean anymore? Like,
well, I think like evolution wise, like the noisiest ones would get killed faster. And so like maybe the quieter ones are just the ones that are left that, you know, they've been able to procreate.
Very stealthy snakes.
And so now they might have like evolved the behavior of rattling might be like evolving out of them.
Yeah, I don't know anything about, you know, the evolution of a rattlesnake other than I can pretty much tell if it's a rattlesnake by looking at the tail and seeing the rattle. Yeah. And a lot of times they're coiled up, but I'll just, to be honest with you, I'll avoid it. You know, I'm not going to go chasing after it. When I was a kid, I liked touching snakes. Like when my cousin had a lot of them, I was totally into that. Like I liked handling them and stuff. I thought they were really cool.
Yeah.
They didn't freak me out or, you know, some people just have this reaction like they, snake.
Actually, yeah, my dad's that way. Like, yeah. If he sees a snake, he instantly craps his pants, and then...
Yeah, one of my sons is like that. Doesn't like snakes at all, but doesn't seem to really bother me. And, you know, I actually run over one on the motorcycle and felt really, really bad about it. Like,
yeah.
Oh, man, I didn't mean to do that, you know?
Right.
But, yeah, you know, I'm glad you didn't get killed.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because, like, in theory, it could have also easily been, you know, a gopher snake, which is mostly harmless.
Right. Right.
But we'll never know. So at some point in my life, this story will become the time where I daringly escaped a rattlesnake.
Right. So what'd you think about Sedona? Because I've been there on motorcycle before.
It was gorgeous. I would love to ride a bike around there. I'd really love to ride a dirt bike around there. Yeah, my friend and I got an Airbnb. We were there for basically, like, we got there on Saturday afternoon, like late in the afternoon, and then left on Monday morning. So we had an evening, a whole day, and then a little bit of a morning, and then left. So not a long time there. And pretty much just enough time to grab dinner a couple of times and do like one hike that took way longer than it should have because I was taking so many pictures.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was beautiful. I really want to go back. The sky was super dramatic every day. The big, you know, the big red rock, like mesas and everything, like towers or whatever, just sticking up out of everywhere were really cool looking. And then, you know, if you're into hippie stuff, which I'm not, but there's all like the vortexes and the crystals and whatever. I don't know.
They're big into that out there, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was out there on a motorcycle on the Stelvio and when we went Yeah. Man, I loved the road driving in was incredible. It's just at one point I got stuck behind some slow traffic and then dumbass me, had my GoPro set the wrong way. So I got a lot of video of the road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like a blessing in disguise to get stuck behind somebody slow in that area. Cause like it gives you a chance to like look around instead of, you know, head down, hauling ass down the freeway or, you know, the highway or whatever.
Right. Right.
Cause yeah, it was beautiful out there.
It was really windy when I was there though, too. That was the other thing. Super windy. When I actually got into Sedona, but it was gorgeous, man. I did some photography there, but like you said, I would have loved to have had like a small dual sport or off-road motorcycle.
That was cool. There was some wind when I was there. It rained that one night while I was there too. It was, and when I woke up in the morning, I think it was in the high 30s or low 40s at first. I mean, it warmed up super fast. Like, The day that we went to go hike, we woke up and it said, like when I woke up at 7 or whatever in the morning, it said it was like 38 degrees outside. And I was just like, oh, crap, I don't know if I brought enough warm clothes for this.
But right. Then
by the time I, you know, drug myself out of bed and got ready for the day, and had breakfast and, you know, all that sort of stuff. It was in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
So I get warmed up real quick. I also learned, so I had known sort of, I guess, informationally that Wendy's serves breakfast now, but I had never had any of it. And it's pretty good. If for fast food breakfast, I'm a big fan, maybe a recent convert to Wendy's breakfast.
What is it, like the same as McDonald's or Burger King breakfast, or is it something special? Like, do they have a Frosty for breakfast?
I don't know. They might actually, but they have the same kinds of, they have the regular things that you would expect, you know, a sausage biscuit, a bacon, you know, egg and cheese kind of sandwich thing. They also have a breakfast baconator, which is like, you know, a sausage patty and 1700 strips of bacon. And they have like a honey butter chicken biscuit that has this kind of like sweet honey butter sauce on it and like a little fried chicken piece and on a biscuit.
Mm-hmm.
I got the maple bacon chicken croissant or whatever it was. And it was like the same kind of honey butter stuff, but with bacon and chicken on a croissant thing. It was great. And their breakfast potato is like a potato wedge that's been like heavily salted and peppered.
Mm-hmm.
Which is very good. So yeah. Shameless plug for being a fat kid and going to Wendy's for breakfast.
Yeah. You know, never hurts to have some delicious junk food every now and then. It's just when you do it every day is when it's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not good. But yeah, it was a fun trip.
You have anything on the horizon? Trip wise or motorcycle related wise?
Mostly just maybe buying a Honda whenever they come out, and going out to visit my kids and stuff. You know, then like not this coming weekend, but the weekend after, I'm going out to Arizona again, and then Thanksgiving again. So, not sure. My bike is getting a lot of rentals. I want to ride some this week, though. At least, even if I'm just commuting to work or something, I want to ride. It's been rough. I've been going to the gym right before work, and so that whole changing into motorcycle gear and out of motorcycle gear for the gym thing, it's just a colossal pain. So I'm just like, yeah, and drive my car most of the time.
Yeah. Well, that's the problem with not having the bikes here. I guarantee if the bikes were here, I would be riding them a lot more. And that's, I keep saying this the last three shows, but the goal is really quickly to get the garage done and, you know, get the bikes moved over here. I've been slowly moving stuff over from the warehouse to the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really realizing there's a lot of crap I can throw away. Like, I'm storing empty boxes of stuff that I don't need, like empty helmet boxes. I don't need any of that crap. I'm going to get rid of it.
I realized I was doing that too. In my closet, my closet does this weird thing, super weird, but like there's a lot of, the like sliding door kind of closet, like you can actually see it behind me, but, you know, not like a walk-in, but my closet extends in either direction past the door a really long ways. And I was just like leaving a bunch of random stuff up there. I had three or four empty helmet boxes just chilling up there. And this has got to go. This is too much.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I have a bunch of parts, spare parts for the Moto Guzzi. I'm just going to put them in the attic because there's no need for them out. I also have a bunch of riding gear that I don't wear anymore that's older, you know, like older rain suits and stuff I'm going to give away.
Yeah.
I'll probably take it all the goodwill. Even like my Arai Norihaga helmet, the Quantum that I had that I got in 2001, I don't wear that. It's worn out. I'm going to take it over to my local barbershop. The guy's got all kinds of motorcycle stuff on the walls and car stuff. All right. I'm going to give it to him. It looks cool, you know?
Yeah.
I'm trying to like pare down the amount of motorcycle crap that I have that I'm not using. Like I went in the cabinet the other day. I got where I keep all like the comms gear and all that. Over the years, I've accumulated so much extra stuff.
Yeah. You probably have like 1,000 USB cords and chargers and mount brackets and pads. And
yeah. Stuff. Like, and all the stuff for the cameras that we got from them, it like tons and tons of things. One thing I did notice going through my crap that was kind of cool. So the Sina Bluetooth system I have in the Schuberth helmet, mm-hmm. it's, I don't know if you've ever seen the way they do this. It's split. One side in the back is the actual comm unit. The other side is the battery. And it's got a removable battery. Well, it's the exact same battery that's in the Prism.
Oh.
And I got like 8 of them.
Nice.
Yeah. So if you're ever on a ride with that thing and the battery starts to go low, you can just swap them out and you're good to go.
Yeah. That's nice.
Yeah. I was like kind of like pleasantly surprised. Oh, a win for a while, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it's I want to get all that stuff, get it out of there. And then if I have the bike, sure, I'll ride them a lot more often. Like, it's a pain in the ass for me to drive 25 minutes south to Jupiter, you know, and then like change. And it just, if the bikes were here, I'd be riding them a lot more.
Yeah. I rode somewhere. I rode to get tacos the other day. That's what I did. Cause I wanted to make sure my bike had been getting rented a lot. And I wanted to make sure that I wanted to ride it to kind of like just check on everything, make sure it was all, you know, working properly or whatever. And so I took it out to lunch. One of the days I was off work last week, went and got some tacos from a local favorite spot called Tacos El Gordo. They're amazing. And it was right after, it was not the same day, but it was like a couple days after we did the last episode, because we were talking about Al Pastor tacos.
Right.
On the show. And I was like, I got to have some now. And I got a spot that I want to go to.
Does that translate to tacos, you fat bastard?
No.
El Gordo is not like, what's that mean?
Oh yeah. It's just like El Gordo is like the fat guy.
Yeah. Tacos, so, you fat bastard. Here you go. All right. I think that right there should close out the show. Tacos, you fat bastard.
All right.
I got nothing else, man. I'm going to go get a taco after I cut the lawn, but.
All right, whatever, you fat bastard. Get out and ride.
See ya.